for argument is Larson v. J.P. Morgan. Mr. McAllister?
Gary McAllister, representing the Colorado Public Employees Retirement Association, along with the General Counsel from COPERA, Mr. Greg Smith from Denver, Colorado. This case arises, Your Honors, from a denial of intervention to appeal a summary judgment of early purchaser claims in a class action which were dismissed on partial summary judgment and were reserved specifically and expressly in the late purchaser settlement that existed between the late purchasers and the bank and Bank One. The intervention analysis and the denial of intervention and the analysis that we must follow in this starts and ends with the issue of finality, the entry of a final order from which an appeal of the interlocutory summary judgment decision of April 4, 2004 could be taken.
You could have had an appeal certified under Rule 54, couldn't you?
Well, Rule 54 neither requires, and as the teachings of Salem, doesn't require that that occur, nor does 1292B relief require.
What difference does that make?
Well, the cases, if you look at McDonald and you look at Romansada and you look at the other cases, the Discovery Zone and Champ, all indicate clearly that the proper tool or procedural mechanism is to appeal once the order becomes final.
Why?
Because you don't have standing otherwise to come in.
No, of course you do. You can bring a suit, or you can, you know.
COPERA is
bring your
absent,
own suit.
COPERA
look,
is an absent
when the new class was certified, the late purchaser class, you knew about that, right? Because you're a member of the late purchaser class, right?
We are a member
you knew
of the
about
late
it.
Purchaser
you knew about
class.
It, right? You knew about it. Did you know about that certification?
We would have received a notice, yes, Your Honor.
And you wouldn't have received a notice about a certification of an early purchaser class.
There was none sent.
But you knew you were an early purchaser,
as well as a late purchaser.
So when you got that late purchaser notice, didn't you wonder what had happened to the early purchaser class?
Well, the early purchaser class was still being represented by class counsel and lead plaintiff Alano.
So did you discover the summary judgment?
Ultimately, yes.
What's ultimately?
2007.
You were a member of both classes, I thought.
Yes, sir, we are.
And you didn't know about the summary judgment?
No, sir.
I don't believe it. I don't believe you.
Well, doctor,
that can't be right.
Lead plaintiff Milano.
You're a member of two classes. You learn that one of them has been certified and the other hasn't. And you just sit there. You don't inquire. You're not interested. Why wasn't that class certified? That's not responsible
for a large enterprise like your association.
You got to know that.
The claims of the purchasers were being pursued by plaintiff Milano.
But why wasn't – look. Court. No certification. Doesn't a light bulb go off in your head when you learn that, you know, you're an early purchaser, late purchaser class certified, early purchaser not certified. It started as one, you know, ball of wax. So don't you then inquire what has happened to the early purchaser class? Well, you should. Maybe next time you will.
Lead plaintiff Alano applied for interlocutory relief from this court, which was denied. So COPERA had every reason to believe that those interests were being advanced. This court was not entertaining interlocutory appeals, and a final order had not been entered. And it's quite clear, Your Honors, that
curious in what your state of mind was. You were aware of the summary judgment order, were you not?
We We were before the approval of the settlement, yes, Your Honor.
No, no. You were aware when you learned about the certification of the late purchaser class, you weren't aware that summary judgment had been granted, throwing out the early purchasers?
We learned what was communicated to us by the notices. I mean, this client is not in a position to monitor every class action and
You're
every
kidding.
Order that comes down
You're kidding.
In the United States.
You're kidding. How big was your claim?
In this case? In this
yes.
case? The early purchaser claim was in the neighborhood of $6
million. $6 million, and you don't bother to figure out whether your claim is still there.
Well, Your Honors, I believe that we have every right to rely upon the established case law of this circuit and the United States Supreme Court in Champ, Romansada, McDonald, and Discovery Zone that all teach us that the proper procedural
Well, it's of course, it's a question, you know, what exactly those cases hold. There have been a lot of case law since the McDonald case in 1977. But I'm just puzzled that you wouldn't know about the summary judgment order.
Well, this is not an intervention to...
And are you saying Villano filed a Rule 54B appeal?
He had a 23F application to this court.
You mean he asked to have the early class certified? Is that what he wanted?
He appealed his standing as the lead plaintiff. On a 23F, when that was ultimately dismissed.
And what did he want? Did he want to remain the lead plaintiff for the late purchasers, or did he want the early purchasers back in, or what?
He did not apply for relief for the early purchasers for the late purchasers.
So your reference to the 23F appeal does nothing for you, because it didn't give any sign that Villano was interested in pursuing the interests of the early purchasers, right?
Well, I disagree, Your Honor, respectfully, because we did not.
No, look, what you said about 23F is that although he was an early purchaser, he wanted to remain as the class representative, but he wanted to be the class representative for the late purchasers because that was the only class that had been certified. That's what you said. So if you knew about the 23F, and you must have known about the summary judgment, you knew that the early purchasers had nobody. They had nobody. But you sat around for 3 years.
Well, Your Honor, that's not...
Relying on case law, not on common sense.
Well, we certainly had the right to rely upon Phillips, and where Phillips is clearly a situation to where the relationship.
So you're relying on cases, but you're not able to give a reason why you shouldn't. The easiest thing for you would have been to file your own lawsuit. You had $6 million at stake.
Well, it seems like that we were protected under the tolling provisions. That we
it
did
doesn't
not,
make
we did
any
not,
sense,
not,
right? It's one look. The tolling that disappears when the tolling. I mean, I agree with you that tolling is the way to think about this, and the way we think about tolling in general, I would hope in this case also, is if you have a good reason to delay suing beyond the statutory deadline, fine. And one good reason would be that you're a member of a class and there's someone pushing the class action. But there wasn't. There was nobody pushing the early purchaser class. You knew that, and you should have brought your own suit, as you could have done, obviously.
This is not a case, Your Honors, where we are seeking to do anything with regard to the late purchase settlement. We've essentially, by virtue of the complaint and intervention that we've...
Precisely. You're just pursuing an early purchase... Forget the relate. You're pursuing an early purchaser claim, which is completely... I agree with you. It's unrelated to the late purchasers. So the fact that the late purchaser class action went forward, the early class action had died, you should have brought your own suit rather than wait years and years and years. And then when you come in very late... You upset the apple cart, and you precipitate the cross appeal, and you unsettle, the existing class action.
Well, I respectfully disagree. My time, I need to reserve my time if I may.
Sure.
We are not here to derail a lawsuit that's within sight of the terminal, which is language that this court has adopted. We did not come in and upset the apple cart, and we intervened solely for purposes of appealing a partial summary judgment which was not final, which under the teachings of the cases we had every right to do.
Okay.
Reserve my time, please.
Thank you, Mr. McAllister. Ms. Corbelly?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Linda Coberly for J.P. Morgan Chase, successor to Bank One Corporation. Judge Anderson did not abuse his discretion here. Coperra had the burden to show that its intervention attempt was reasonably prompt after it learned of its interest in this case and learned that its interests were no longer being represented.
What was the prejudice here?
Well, there's a couple of kinds of prejudice, Your Honor. One is that we spent a great deal of time and effort settling this class action, trying to draw it to a close. It takes a long time to settle a class action that's been certified. There's negotiation that takes place over a period of time. There's a fairness hearing. Plaintiffs were notified and so on. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into that, and that's exactly the kind of prejudice that this Court has recognized in some of its cases, in Ragsdale, for example, that justifies denial of intervention at the last moment. In addition, let's not forget about the $28 million. If Coperra and the elite class plaintiffs have their way, that money will go out the door to the class. Now, fortunately, they've not been able at this point to persuade anyone of that. And for now, Judge Anderson has ruled that the $28 million will stay in escrow because the settlement has not become effective. But that position is on appeal. We feel strongly we have the better side of it. But remember, Coperra is really trying to have its cake and eat it too here. It's a member of the late purchaser class, which has settled. And apparently, it wants to collect as a member of the late purchaser class from a settlement that was supposed to end the litigation altogether, and yet keep the litigation open in an effort to resuscitate claims that haven't been part of this case for 3.5 years.
So in that settlement, were you really trying to settle both the early and the late purchaser claims?
We were trying to settle with all the parties who were in court. And at
why did you have that provision about if someone from the early purchaser group sues within a certain time frame, then it stops the settlement?
Well, remember, we were negotiating this settlement last summer. And as I said, it takes a long time to settle a class action. What we did in negotiating that arrangement was to try to envision every possible contingency and protect the bank as best we could from whatever might happen later on. Now, even at that point, the early purchaser claims for anyone who wasn't in the lawsuit would have been time barred. So there was really fairly little risk, but we're talking about a lot of money. So the bank negotiated a deal that protected its interests as best it could. The fact that the settlement agreements contemplated certain kinds of contingencies that might happen over a period of months doesn't mean that it's not prejudiced if those contingencies come to pass. We think that the protections we negotiated have at this point saved us from spending, from actually paying out the $28 million settlement. But they didn't, the contingencies didn't protect us from the prejudice of having proceeded all this way down the road to end the litigation, only to find after final judgment that there's a party who knew about its interests for a long time and didn't do anything to assert them. What Coperra should have done here is file its own lawsuit. It's contended in its briefs that the summary judgment order would have barred that lawsuit, and that's simply not correct. The summary judgment order was entered when no class was certified. So Coperra's claims would not have been barred by that summary judgment order. And in fact, if Coperra had decided to sue on its own when its claim wasn't time barred, it may very well have been able to proceed to appeal long before it did here. The only reason we can think of why it's proceeded in this fashion is strategy. Now, Coperra itself in its briefs cast its options as options. It said it had three options. It could choose. It could choose to intervene early on after summary judgment. It could choose to file its own lawsuit. Or it could choose to wait until final judgment to intervene for purposes of appeal. But Rule 24 doesn't give the intervener a choice about when to intervene. Rule 24 in this Court's cases require that the intervener act reasonably promptly after
looking at it. Are you saying that if they had, if Coperra had brought a lawsuit on its own, say after the summary judgment Are you saying it would have jeopardized its its piece of the late purchaser? So that's your argument, right? Because
I don't think it would necessarily have jeopardized its. I mean,
presumably the bank has a finite amount of money it wants to allocate to this litigation. So the more early claims there are. I thought that was what you were arguing. The more early claims there are, the more resistant J.P. Morgan would be to a generous settlement of the late claims. Isn't that what you meant when you said their strategy was to try to somehow sew up their interest as a late purchaser and then spring the early purchaser appeal?
Essentially, with the purpose of a settlement from the perspective of the defendant is to end the litigation. We settled the case because we thought that the settlement was ending the litigation. The economics of the settlement look very different
So you thought, yes, all the early purchasers were time barred, except of course for
except for the named plaintiffs who had filed the
except
lawsuit.
For the named plaintiffs.
And the named plaintiffs in the notice that went out in September of 2007. The notice was very clear. The late purchasers were releasing all their claims as part of the settlement with the late purchaser class. But the named plaintiffs were individually releasing all other claims they had as well. And so the named plaintiffs, who were really the only parties withstanding to appeal the summary judgment order anyway, were releasing their claims, and COPERA, we believe COPERA knew about it all along, but they received explicit notice of that last September and yet did nothing in the whole settlement process, the fairness hearing, and so on.
Were they late? Weren't they late purchasers?
They were both.
They
were both late purchasers and early purchasers.
So Villano was an early and a late, too?
Villano represented a trust that was only an early purchaser. But there were certainly claims brought on behalf of both.
Oh, I see. Villano was early, but he wanted to stay in when the late was certified.
Yes.
He wanted to stay.
Of course, Villano's 23F appeal happened before any of this happened. It happened before summary judgment was granted, before this division between
before
the
summary
and late
judgment,
was created.
No.
And he appealed, actually, because he was held to be it was a concern. He was an inadequate representative because he had actually worked for the subsidiary of Bank One that was the subject of the allegations in the lawsuit. So it was totally unrelated to this issue about early and late purchase.
What is Copera's share of the $28 million, if that's
I'm not sure the answer to that. You're not sure what the size of their claim is, but you know, Copera has many, 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 many millions of dollars under management. It's a very sophisticated, every reason to believe its claim. You know, he said here in court that his individual claim as an early purchaser is quite sizable. We ask that that the order denying intervention be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Comerly. Mr. McAllister, how much time is he?
Why did we not file a lawsuit? Answer, the judge had determined on the merits that the early purchasers had no claim. We don't routinely file a lawsuit when a court has ruled that
so
you
why
have
didn't
no
you,
basis for a claim. Oh. Secondly, Salem,
why didn't you intervene and then and
Salem,
why didn't you intervene then and
Salem
file a Rule 54B?
54B is not required under the holdings of Salem.
It's not a question of what's required. It's not a question of what's required. It's a question of trying to do what we can to promote the orderly management of class actions. And so I'm interested, now maybe you're right and we're blocked by precedent, but I'm interested in whether there's any logic to your having delayed, whether there was any prejudice to you that required you to delay.
McDonald stands for the proposition.
Yes, I know what McDonald stands for. Maybe you're right about that. We're not going to haggle about the details of judicial opinions and in oral arguments. So maybe you're right, but I'm still interested in whether you have any reason for thinking that it would upset the class action apple cart to require people to sue or appeal or what have you within the statute of limitations unless there's some reason for waiting around.
May I respond to your question?
Sure.
And we are not, this notion that we are upsetting the apple cart is wrong. The bank puts into, without the record and without giving Judge Anderson the benefit to consider it, pages 10 and 11 of its brief, a non-public confidential letter saying that they knew and expected and carved out a unilateral right to withdraw from the settlement if there was an intervention or if a lawsuit filed before the approval of the settlement. Their claim of prejudice is out the window, never given to the judge for consideration below, and now they come into court and say we're upsetting the apple cart. The early purchaser claims were expressly removed from the release, the notice, and the settlement agreement.
Sure, but if you're the bank and you're faced with this litigation, you would like to know, you know, before you pay out $28 million, who else is going to come and whack you, right? They want to know that. So my question is, given that interest, is there some countervailing interest of yours, of Copera's, that would tell you, it would have been premature to have intervened or brought your own suit?
All of the cases that we've described for you.
The cases, yes, but is there some reason you couldn't have done that? Couldn't have moved early.
A final order from which to intervene and appeal. All we are doing is to appeal.
Are you saying you couldn't have intervened? Answer my question.
Could we have intervened before? Yes, sir. Would it have been imprudent to do so?
Why would it have been imprudent?
Because we did not have a final order.
Why did that make it imprudent?
Because the timing to do that, all we want to do is to appeal.
But why would it have been imprudent?
To preserve the rights of the early purchaser's claims and the countervailing problem here, they will be extinguished. Completely extinguished.
Of course, because years have passed. The statute of limitations is run.
Your Honor.
Of course, they should be extinguished.
With all due respect, your decision in Phillips gives good comfort for the relation back. We adopted the complaint. We are not here to upset an apple cart. We are here to preserve claims that were expressly reserved in the late purchaser settlement agreement. The prejudice that occurs to Copera is that you extinguish their claims and the entire early purchaser class is out. That is not what the bank bargained for. They defined litigation with a capital L.
You're bringing in the whole of the early purchasers?
We only came for the benefit of all of the early purchasers. We did not pursue this as an individual action. If we pursued this on our individual basis, you would be absolutely
right. So you're facing them with another. So you, I didn't realize that. You want to face them with another class action?
Absolutely, because they defined the litigation in the settlement agreement with the record on appeal with a capital L.
All right.
Do these cases you cite destroy the discretion of the trial judge under Rule 24?
They do not destroy the discretion.
Yeah, that's the standard here, is abuse of discretion.
It is abuse of discretion on the timeliness issue only. Nisi describes that all else are de novo. What you have here is an absence of a record. There is no basis, in fact, on this record on appeal for Judge Anderson to have done what he did, and particularly not in the face of this undisclosed, confidential letter.
You're saying he can't exercise his discretion?
He relied upon the bank's statement in open court and on the record and in their papers that they had no ability to expect or anticipate the intervention of an early purchaser. That is false. That was undisclosed to Copera and any other party. That is very significant.
Okay.
Undisclosed and false.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, both counsel. Next case for argument is Simila versus Ask.